To those of us, wrote a former communist miner after Deutsch's death, to those of us who were groping in the 50s for an explanation of the brutally irrational distortions which had cramped the life of the socialist movement, the almost lone voice of Deutscher came as a blinding revelation. And was not Deutscher the heretic stranger who appeared to be in communism and yet not in it, to be of communism and yet not of it, who, like Acher, showed a curious respect for his pupil's orthodoxy and a care lest they wander beyond the boundaries of Marxism and of communism and become lost? Was it not Deutscher who, alone among European socialists, was invited by the American New Left, to whom his Marxism itself was heretical, to address them at their great anti-war teaching? And was it not Deutscher who proclaimed at Berkeley to this New Left the urgency of giving back to class struggle its old dignity and of restoring meaning once again to the idea of communism? Listen again to the voice of Deutscher's communist pupil. For so many of us, he was a regenerator of hope. In him, we found the link between humanism and socialism, which allowed us to rediscover Marx himself and our own history. Indeed, was not the very essence of Deutsch's work, the transcendence of communism in the Hegelian sense, of preserving the best, the real achievement of the old, even while surpassing and annulling it towards the new? In the figure of Acher, Deutscher had come to recognize not only a Jewish tradition, but also a prototype of those revolutionaries of modern thought, from Spinoza to Marx, who had found Jewry too narrow, too archaic, and too constricting, and looked for ideals and fulfillment beyond it. Such an ideal, Marx, Trotsky, Rosa Luxemburg, and Deutscher himself found in the struggle for an international socialist society. In 1926, Deutscher joined the Polish Communist Party and entered the revolutionary ranks. Then, as the Russian Revolution, isolated by the failure of the revolutions in the West, began to succumb to the despotism and backwardness of the Russian environment, Deutscher joined the Trotskyist opposition, which was fighting a losing battle within the revolution, to arrest its departure from Marxist and socialist norms. In 1932, he was expelled from the party for spreading panic about Nazism. And during the next years, he continued his opposition, exposing the mass terror in Russia and the purge trials in which the old Bolshevik leadership perished. In 1938, however, when, convinced that the Third International was morally dead, Trotsky launched its successor, Deutscher demurred. The creation of every one of the earlier internationals, argued Deutscher, constituted a definite threat to bourgeois rule. This would not be the case with the Fourth International, because no significant section of the working class would respond to its manifesto, and it would become a mere collection of sects. It was necessary to wait. It was at this point that Deutscher's lonely sojourn began, a sojourn that made possible his unique contribution to the world revolutionary movement and its future regeneration. For having belonged to those whom Stalin had cruelly defeated, Deutscher set about to systematically examine why Stalin had succeeded and why the historic development had taken the course that it did. In the end, Deutscher came to see Stalinism differently from Trotsky. He saw it not as a usurpation of Bolshevik power, but as a distorted evolution of a current within Bolshevism itself, brought out by its isolation and the autocratic backwardness of its environment. He saw in Stalinism not a Thermidorian bureaucracy arresting the revolutionary development, but a bureaucratized revolution carrying through that development with the barbarous means and primitive outlook of its native surroundings. For this, Deutscher was made a heretic and an outcast on the left. Damned by the Stalinists for maintaining his Marxist ideals and outlook against the debasement of the revolution, denounced by the Trotskyists for recognizing that the brutally realized achievements of the Stalinist bureaucracy were revolutionary, Deutscher remained totally isolated throughout the first decade of the Cold War. Then the historic development took a new turn. And it was these very traits for which he had been damned that now made him a teacher and inspiration to the generation of 56 and to those of us who grew to political maturity afterwards. For us, too, the Stalinist development of Soviet Russia had historic substance and validity. The forced march from the age of the wooden plow to the era of Sputnik and the atom bomb may not have been a socialist march in the classical Marxist sense, but it certainly represented a tremendous leap towards liberation in terms of that two-thirds of the world's population that was still sunk in the mire and misery of underdevelopment and backwardness. Deutscher, above all, recognized the epical significance of this ascent and the revolutionary, if brutal and wasteful, role of Stalinism in presiding over it. At the same time, he possessed that critical attitude towards Stalinism, that Marxist criticism of its deeds and claims, which he owed to Trotsky and the left opposition, and which was absolutely crucial for us, and so vital to any regeneration of the revolutionary left in the West. To this regeneration, which he above all else strove for, and to which he dedicated his genius, Deutscher made still another essential contribution. It is best indicated, perhaps, by a passage which Deutscher wrote in Tribune in February 1945, at a time when the Stalinist terror had almost a decade to run. He wrote, "Just as it is possible for a strong adherent of capitalism to stick to its democratic form and to oppose capitalism in totalitarian form, so it is also possible and necessary for socialists to fight for socialist democracy and against the totalitarian distortion of socialism. However, the difference between capitalism and socialism is that capitalism historically gravitates towards fascism, while socialism gravitates towards freedom. The defender of the democratic form of capitalism is, in a sense, revolting against the inner logic of the social system he defends. The defender of socialist freedom as against a quasi-socialist totalitarianism is, in the long run, in harmony with the trend of history that must eventually steer away from the totalitarian backwaters into the open skies of a free society." It was Deutscher who, by analyzing the roots of Stalinist despotism with the tools of Marxism, and by prophetically indicating the direction in which the historic development was pointing, restored to my generation that confidence in Marxist theory and that revolutionary optimism without which there can be no revolutionary action. For this alone, we and revolutionary generations to come will pay him homage.
Deutscher is very a book, a history of the Russian Revolution, which Marcel Liebmann has just published in Belgium and France. Before calling upon Mr. Liebmann to speak, I think I might perhaps say that there is a typical side to Isaac Deutscher's interest in that book. For when Marcel was a friend of some years of Isaac Deutscher's, sent him the manuscript of the book, Deutscher didn't merely acknowledged the receipt of the book, sent it back with some comments. But as so often with other people's writings, particularly with people's minds he respected, went through it, took time, argued, and sent back criticism and comment, as well as felicitation and eulogy. It is because of typifies that I have great pleasure in calling upon Mr. Liebmann to address you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I could, of course, approve every word of Bertrand Russell's message and all his remarks on the significance of Isaac Deutscher for history and for socialism. I'm afraid that I view my contribution to this meeting in a rather dry way, to which I try to stick. But before trying to assess Deutscher's significance as an historian, I just want to say this, that for young, less young, intellectual, Marxist intellectual workers, he meant, of course, a shining example, but much more than a shining example. He brought us in very barren and difficult surroundings in a sort of intellectual and political desert. He brought to all of us a sense of dignity which we lacked for many reasons which are well known. Being so, what I'll try to do is to outline briefly what was Isaac Deutscher's original contribution to the history, but more than to the history of the Russian Revolution, also to the interpretation of the revolutionaries and of Soviet Russian society and evolution. It goes without saying that there are two categories of historians who had absolutely nothing in common with Isaac Deutscher. And in comparison with those historians, he absolutely, in a very sharp way, dissociated himself. There were, first of all, the conservative historians and observers of Soviet Russia, who seem to have been unable to digest October and the aftermath of October, and who still consider the October Revolution not as a social phenomenon which ought to be described and analyzed, but as a social disaster. And because of that, who do not succeed in analyzing, but only succeed in exposing and denouncing. And in a very, as a sort of paradox, side by side with that school of historians and observers, there is another set, another category of historians or pseudo-historians, the friends or the pseudo-friends of the Russian Revolution, who have come to eventually to found what has been rightly called the Stalinist school of falsification. It goes without saying that Deutscher had nothing in common with either category of those historians. What is, I think, more interesting is to compare Deutsch's approach and interpretation of the Russian Revolution and the Soviet Russian evolution, to compare his approach of this huge and complex problem to the approach of Marxist, socialist, left-wing critics, some Marxist, socialist, and left-wing critics of Soviet Russia. Because in this field, its originality and its depth and insight is very well exemplified and illustrated. I would say, very briefly, that the differences, sometimes the disagreements and the divergences between Isaac Deutscher and those Marxist and socialist critics of Soviet Russia can be summarized in three different points. First of all, the nature of Soviet Russia under Lenin's leadership. Secondly, the fight in Russia for Lenin's heritage. And thirdly, the nature of Stalin's Russia and, as a whole, the nature of Soviet society as a whole. The first point is interpretation and even the description of Russia under Lenin. It is for the socialist admirers and friends of the Russian Revolution a too easily admitted idea that there existed a very sharp contrast between, on the first side, Russia under Lenin, which was presented, and sort of nostalgia was not alien to this representation, which was represented as a perfect example of popular and proletarian democracy, a sharp contrast between that regime and, on the other side, Stalin, Russia under Stalin from 1922 or 24 onwards.